It is Monday, July 6th. The headlines are moving faster than the systems meant to contain them, so let's take a look at what's actually happening. The AI sector is currently caught in a massive, expensive game of chicken between infrastructure overbuild and real-world revenue. Hyperscalers have poured hundreds of billions into data centers, but the primary application developers are still running massive deficits. Because the demand for these models isn't matching the breakneck pace of spending, firms are now leasing out their idle compute capacity to stay afloat. It is starting to look a lot like the fiber optic bubble of 1999. The industry is responding to this pressure by trying to embed itself directly into the machinery of both government and enterprise. Microsoft has launched a $2.5 billion venture, deploying 6,000 engineers to work directly inside client companies. This is forward-deployed engineering, a move designed to lock in corporate customers before they realize they might not actually need the tech as much as they thought. Meanwhile, OpenAI is reportedly exploring a 5% equity stake for the U.S. government. They are essentially trying to rebrand themselves as too big to fail, infrastructure to secure a lifeline before the market forces a reckoning. They are creating a moral hazard where private companies burn through venture capital to chase hype, then pivot to the taxpayer when the math stops working. Calling this a sovereign AI partnership is just a thin coat of paint on a potential bailout. That strategy smells like a classic shitty move. The shift toward autonomous agent management is also changing the nature of technical work. Developers are moving away from manual prompting and toward using systems to run projects as state machines. You define a workflow in a file, and the agent handles the execution and error correction. It's a cleaner way to work, but it comes with a catch. You have to treat your agent instructions as technical debt. If you don't purge the stale commands, the system bloats and the performance tanks. It turns out that even with artificial intelligence, you still have to take out the trash. Beyond the code, the industry is trying to solve its reputation problem by hiring philosophers to write morality into the models. Companies like Anthropic are elevating ethicists with technical backgrounds to build moral frameworks directly into their systems. It's a strange moment where a philosophy PhD might actually be a more valuable hire than a software engineer. They aren't just building tools anymore. They are trying to program the behavioral rules for a machine that thinks. There is a weird, discordant note playing beneath all of this. While the tech giants are trying to secure their place in the government's good graces, the state is launching initiatives like the child-focused Trump accounts. These accounts seed S&P 500 index funds for minors, with the hope of turning millions of kids into lifelong shareholders. On the surface, it's about financial inclusion. In reality, it's a way to align the interests of the next generation with the performance of the corporate giants currently dominating the economy. It is a hell of a thing to see these two tracks running in parallel. On one side, you have companies trying to offload their financial risks onto the state. On the other, the state is trying to make sure every citizen has a stake in the success of those same companies. It's a closed loop. For the average business, the takeaway is pretty stark. You aren't just buying software anymore. You are entering a relationship where your vendor might become your competitor, and your data might end up being used to train the very thing that replaces you. We are moving out of the phase of speculative fun and into a period of deep, institutionalized friction. The winners won't be the ones with the flashiest prompts. They will be the ones who manage to navigate the plumbing, the regulation, and the messy reality of being owned by their own infrastructure. It's going to be a long, disciplined slog. Don't expect the hype to do the heavy lifting for you anymore. That infrastructure gamble is a hell of a thing to watch, but it isn't just the servers that are starting to buckle under the weight. The U.S. government is effectively turning the world's rulebooks into optional suggestions. We've got a string of events this week that look unrelated on the surface, but they all share one ugly commonality. the total disregard for established institutional boundaries. Start with the World Cup. FIFA invoked Article 27 to clear Folarin Balogun, pronounced Fo-L-A-H-rin Bilo-H-gun, for the round of 16 after he was hit with a red card. Reports suggest this followed direct, high-level diplomatic pressure from the White House. UEFA is already calling the move unprecedented and unjustifiable. It's a hell of a thing to watch a global governing body fold because a head of state decided the rules shouldn't apply to his team. When you do that, you don't just fix a game. You tell every other nation that the field isn't level. It's just tilted in favor of whoever has the most leverage. Then there is the domestic side of this erosion. President Trump is currently blocking a bipartisan housing bill that's meant to lower living costs. He isn't doing it because he hates the policy. He's holding it hostage to force his own agenda on voting requirements, the Save America Act. He's essentially daring his own party to defy him. If he keeps this up, he's going to force a showdown. If he vetoes the bill, he's looking at a likely override, the first of his term. That would be a massive public fracture in GOP unity. It's a cynical trade-off, really. He's willing to torch his own party's legislative wins just to prioritize control over the mechanics of how we vote. This pattern is popping up everywhere. Look at how the administration is pressuring the Smithsonian to adopt a specific nationalist narrative. They're trying to turn public museums from educational spaces into glorified PR machines for the executive branch. It's the same energy we're seeing internationally with China and Iran. Beijing is firing long-range missiles from submarines, clearly deciding that the political friction with Japan and Australia is a price they're perfectly fine paying. Iran is using massive, state-managed funeral processions for its late supreme leader to project a sense of stability that might not actually exist. These aren't just isolated power moves. They're symptoms of a global shift where the rules of the road are increasingly treated as obstacles to be bypassed rather than guardrails to be respected. Back in sports, the Boston Celtics are dealing with their own version of this. The new ownership, led by Bill Kishom, has the fan base in an absolute tailspin after trading Jaylen Brown for Paul George. People are reading this as a pure, cold-blooded, cost-cutting move. It's a performance trap. If the team doesn't win immediately, the brand equity of the whole franchise is going to take a massive hit. It's what happens when you prioritize fiscal-first models over the long-term community expectations that actually built the team's value. Look, here's the thing. Whether it's FIFA bending the knee to a president or a government treating housing legislation like a poker chip, the takeaway is the same. We are moving into an era where regulatory consistency is dead. It's not just that the rules are changing. It's that the people in charge have decided that being right, or fair, is significantly less important than just winning the current hand. It's a shitty way to run a country, and it's an even shittier way to run a global competition. Eventually, this catches up to you. When you decide that institutional trust is a luxury you can't afford, you're left with a system that only functions as long as you can force it to. And that is a hell of a fragile way to exist. Ignoring the rules might work for a while, but eventually, you run out of runway. It's the same problem whether you're running a league or a team. The 2026 NFL Power Rankings are out, and they serve as a masterclass in why talent is a terrible proxy for success. The Rams and Seahawks are sitting at the top, mostly because they manage their roster dependencies better than everyone else. The Rams are betting big on stars like Myles Garrett, but they've left themselves thin on the offensive line. It's a classic short-term championship play, which is a polite way of saying they're one Matthew Stafford injury away from a total collapse. Meanwhile, teams like the Broncos are doing the boring work. They are looking for specific, repeatable gaps in their offense. It's not flashy, but it makes the whole system easier to run. That is the difference between a team that relies on a miracle every Sunday and one that's built to actually endure a season. Which brings us to the broader question of how we maintain any system, whether it's a football roster or a bank account. We have this persistent, shitty habit of treating success as a static destination. You see it in the passive income crowd, where founders think they can just build a machine and walk away. That's a fantasy. Systems are subject to entropy, and they will decay the second you stop auditing the metrics. If you aren't willing to move from the technician who builds the thing to the defender who monitors it, you're going to lose. It's not about finding a set-it-and-forget-it hack. It's about accepting that your responsibility never actually becomes passive. This reality is hitting the media world, too. The traditional firewall between editorial and business is dead, mostly because search traffic is drying up. Publishers are being forced to adopt a half-wall strategy, which is just a fancy way of saying they need to stop relying on algorithms and start building direct relationships with their audience. The smart ones are moving to email and text messaging, treating their readers like a community rather than a traffic stat. It requires a total shift in mindset. Journalists now have to be creators who understand the commercial realities of their own survival. If you're waiting for the search engines to save you, you're already out of business. Everything here, from the NFL to local news to the creator economy, is trending toward the same conclusion. You cannot rely on external platforms or temporary advantages to keep you afloat. Even creators who look like they're just blowing up on social media are now using agencies like United Talent Agency to build actual infrastructure. They're diversifying into physical products and live events because they know the algorithm is fickle. They're trying to become platform agnostic, which is the only way to avoid being wiped out when the feed changes. It's all about building a business that functions independently of the thing that made you famous in the first place. If you're feeling overwhelmed by all this, there's a tool for that, though it sounds like something a middle manager would put in a slide deck. It's called the Someday Letter. You write out a 10-year vision, and then you use it to work backward. If your daily tasks don't fit that vision, you cut them. It sounds simple, but it's actually a brutal way to identify where you're just running in circles. Most of us mistake immediate utility for progress, but checking off a to-do list isn't the same as moving the needle. When you have a fixed anchor in the future, it gets a lot easier to spot the difference between a real investment and a distraction. Ultimately, this is all just a long-winded way of saying that resilience isn't a personality trait. It's an operational process. Whether you're a leader dealing with an awkward promotion, a founder auditing a revenue stream, or a coach shuffling your depth chart, the goal is the same. You have to replace your assumptions with structure. You have to stop reacting to the fire and start designing the system that prevents it from starting in the first place. It's not sexy, and it's definitely not passive, but it's the only way to keep from falling apart. Managing your roster is one thing, but managing your own biology is a different kind of project entirely. Here is why we are failing at it. Researchers have confirmed that our modern environment is actively working against our biology. A series of recent reports highlights that human cognitive function, nervous system health, and even basic metabolic repair are being bottlenecked by the very spaces we inhabit and the digital tools we carry. The data is clear. We are currently operating in environments to which we are not evolutionarily adapted. Environmental neuroscience shows that nature is not merely a nice place to spend a Sunday. It is a functional requirement for cognitive recovery. When we navigate urban environments, our brains rely on directed attention, which is a finite resource that eventually hits a wall of fatigue. Nature, however, engages in voluntary attention. Studies using the backwards digit span task show that performance improves by 20% after a walk in a natural setting. This happens even if the person doesn't particularly enjoy the walk. It isn't a preference. It is a physiological necessity because our brains are hardwired to process the fractal patterns found in nature with significantly less effort than the chaotic, dense stimuli of a city. Which is a hell of a thing to consider when you look at how we design our hospitals and offices. We prioritize efficiency over human cognitive needs, even though visual access to nature correlates with lower aggression and faster recovery times. This isn't just about where we stand, but how we connect. Keeping your home free from digital noise is now being framed as a practical strategy to regain agency. The constant hum of connectivity creates a background level of mental effort that forces the brain to stay in a state of sympathetic overdrive. We are essentially choosing to fight the urge to check for updates instead of resting. By building analog systems and limiting digital access, you remove the exhaustion of choice. You aren't just unplugging for the sake of it. You are creating a sanctuary where your nervous system can finally drop the survival act and focus on repair. Because here's the thing about your nervous system. It doesn't care about your productivity goals if it thinks you're under threat. If you are stuck in that sympathetic fight-or-flight state, your body pulls resources away from immune repair and hormone production. You can eat the perfect diet and take every supplement on the shelf, but if your nervous system is in a survival loop, you aren't going to heal. This is why metabolic issues like insulin resistance or weight gain are often downstream effects of chronic stress rather than the root cause. The body has to feel safe before it can do the heavy lifting of biological maintenance. There is also a growing push to move away from one-size-fits-all health advice. Neurologists like Dr. Trupti Gakani, pronounced TRUPTIGOKAHNI, are pointing out that our constitutional energetic types, whether you lean toward Vata, pronounced Vata, Pitta, pronounced Pitta, or Kapha, pronounced Kapha, dictate how we process stress. A person with a Vata imbalance might actually make their anxiety worse by following standard advice like eating raw salads or doing high-intensity exercise. This is about the gut-brain axis. Chronic stress triggers neurological patterns that tighten the gut, which leads to microbiome imbalances, which then fuels even more systemic inflammation. It is a feedback loop that runs both top-down and bottom-up. The takeaway here is pretty stark. We have to stop acting like passive patients who just need a new pill to suppress a symptom. We need to start acting like CEOs of our own biology. That means aligning our environment, our digital habits, and our daily rhythms with our specific biological blueprints. It means treating our homes as infrastructure for our health. Ignoring this connection forces the brain to run on a deficit. It keeps us in a state of chronic, low-grade survival mode. And honestly, for a species that is supposed to be the most advanced thing on the planet, we are doing a remarkably shitty job of setting up the environment we actually need to function. We are built for a different world than the one we are currently sitting in. Anyway, here is what else you need to know today. A few other things worth knowing today. Young professionals are being told to stop hoarding every cent for retirement. It turns out that saving too much early on leaves you broke when you actually need to pay for a wedding or a down payment. The Iliad is apparently a great manual for watching leaders fall apart under pressure. It is essentially a laboratory for human failure, which, honestly, might be more useful than most modern management books. Abraham Lincoln pulled a fast one at Gettysburg. He effectively rewired the American founding by pivoting our national identity from the Constitution to the Declaration of Independence. The Pacific and equatorial heat waves are merging into a massive thermal anomaly. This is creating a perfect storm for super typhoons and heat domes, which is a shitty situation for anyone living in the West. Wall Street analysts are currently betting the S&P 500 will end the year at 7,716. They are also split by 1,200 points, so nobody actually knows what is happening. Public key cryptography uses something called a commutative, pronounced commutative, trapdoor to let people trade secrets without a shared key. It is the kind of math that keeps the government up at night, and for good reason. Pharmaceutical companies are using patent thickets to keep generic drugs off the market. They file hundreds of secondary patents just to keep the clock running and force competitors into expensive, endless litigation. Holding onto old resentment is a great way to wreck your own professional life. Forgiveness is not just for your soul. It is a practical tool to clear the mental space you need to actually do your job. Stop chasing passion and start chasing contribution. Focusing on external value instead of your own self-actualization is a much more stable way to build a career that doesn't fall apart. The American dream was never a static target. It has evolved from a set of abstract ideals in 1783 into a project that you have to build yourself, usually through a fair amount of discomfort. If you want to make something worth watching, get your studio as far away from the executives as possible. Physical distance is the only thing that stops the suits from micromanaging your work into the ground. That is the midday update. Get back to it, and I will see you tomorrow.